Welcome to this episode of our podcast. It was originally recorded as a webinar for the Australian Wool Innovation and the Livestock Collective Partner Program. The program aims to engage with growers by bringing valuable information directly to the regions through events, workshops, and key topics. So we're hoping by converting it over to a podcast, many growers can listen to it on the run. In this episode, we're focusing on the preparation at shearing time. Joining us are Dr. Mick, a veterinarian and director of GenStock with over 20 years of experience working with ruminants, and Darren Spencer, a shearing contractor in Western Australia, as well as president of the WA Shearing Association. Hi all, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Darren, our representative from the shearing industry, is almost on board, but we'll kick off with the webinar. So firstly, I'd like to thank AWI, who is behind this webinar, which is part of the partner program with them. And they've tasked the Livestock Collective with finding out what growers want and need. And that's through a survey, which we encourage anyone who hasn't done it that's on here tonight to do that, because it's really, really, really great to know which growers want in what regions. And a question and questions and a topic that came up time and time again was preparation for shearing, hence why we're here tonight. So we have from the Livestock Collective, Stephen Bolt, somewhere on the line here. We've got Marion Lewis, and then we've got Dr. Michaela Seal, and then we've also got Darren Spencer joining us. Do you want to quickly introduce yourself, actually, Darren, before we go into this? On who you are and what
I
you
can
do.
Yeah, I can do. I apologise to everyone for being late. My truck turned up an hour and a half late with a load of lambs. So, I'm Darren Spencer. I'm a shearing contractor in Lake Grace in WA and current president of the WA Shearing Industry Association.
Awesome. So we're literally just getting started in the questions, Darren, that have been submitted. And I sent them through to you earlier, but just on the first sort of case study, so lamb specifically, we'll start with Dr. Mick, and then I'll sort of direct the questions to who I think are best suited, but feel free to chip in at the end if there's anything you wanted to add. Lamb specifically, yeah. How to manage them, how long to be off feed and water, anything. What's your thoughts on that, Dr. Michaela?
So we know with weaned lambs, right, they research shows that we get 75% of their gut contents they'll actually get rid of within the first 12 hours of feed, right? So it's really important we keep that in mind, that we need that gut empty to make it more comfortable for the lambs when we're shearing them, and also for the shearers, because it's a two-way street. It's making sure we've got animal welfare covered as well as occupational health and safety for our shearers in both aspects there. So we do know also with lambs that if we do have them off feed for extended periods, we can actually affect their carcass weight. So what I do recommend, we have a minimum of 12 and up to 24 hours off feed for lambs to make sure that we're meeting those requirements and we're not having a negative impact on them.
So we'll go straight into ramps. We briefly touched on it. Let's talk about ramps now. Yeah, curfews, preparation, and also after shearing.
Okay. So we know rams, they're big animals, and we need to make sure that they're well emptied out before shearing, right? So I recommend 18 hours to 48 hours of food and water. Now, 18 hours is bring them in around lunchtime the day before, right? Shearing, that's good. But 48 hours, we don't really want it in extended longer than that. And the Australian welfare standards don't recommend having animals off food and water for longer than 48 hours. If it is really hot weather, we've also got to be conscious of that as well, because extended periods off water can lead to overheating of those rams. Right. So with a ram with their sperm production, it takes 59 days to produce sperm. So from a cell to them ejaculating it out and able to get sheep pregnant. So if we have a stressor, a major stressor in that period, we can throw out all this semen for sperm production. So ideally, I really recommend rams being shorn at least 2 months before heading out. Okay. It also allows them to have that bit of protection of wool growth before they're going out for joining. So that's important as well. Okay. Also, I tend to find when we get rams brought in into the shed for semen collection, if they're at shearing, sometimes it can just usually throw them out if adhering to that for 1 to 2 weeks, their semen may be slightly off, right? They're still going to get sheep pregnant, but it can be slightly off. But if we're going out for extended periods and major stresses, it can throw it out a lot longer. The other reason why I like that 2 months before they're going out for joining is if they get any cuts or shearing cuts, they can get infected, increase body temperature and affect their sperm production. So again, that's another consideration there. The other thing is when we're sedating rams coming into shearing, we need to be considering how we manage them after shearing, because we've got to remember a sedative reduces an animal's ability to control their body temperature. So say they're freshly shorn, they run out into the yards with no shade, no water, it's really bloody hot, that is really going to affect them. So it's not the actual shearing process, it's actually the management of those animals. And likewise, if it's bloody cold, that will also, and they're being sedated, they've got less of ability to control their body temperature. So providing shelter, okay? And also water post-shearing as well. But that would be my main points about rams. Do we want to go on to sedative dose, or do you want to touch that later, unless Darren's got any comments from his perspective?
Yeah, Darren, on rams?
Yeah, I just see someone put up on the chat about rams and how drained they are. We as an association done a lot of work with Dr. Ray Beatty. And one thing he really implored on us was to make sure that the rams are well drained out, because otherwise when you sit them up on their bum, you'll suffocate them because everything relaxes and drops down and scrunches up. And he said he'd found that they suffocated quite a lot if they still had a full stomach. So that was one thing on that. Yeah, and, you know, we look at rams, we want them in at least 24 hours or more before shearing them and still sedate them, but try not to let them out into the direct heat on a really hot day, because I'll agree, you know, people let them out and then they backline them, and I think it heats them up even more, backlining them, and that's how people will lose rams.
There was a question there. I'll ask it now. Does ACE have any better or poorer efficiency or risks depending on how empty rams are?
Okay. If rams are, it's better off that they are emptied out. Okay. Again, it's mainly because of when a ram's sedated, and like Darren was saying, they've got a, if they're not emptied out, they actually, all those guts is putting pressure on their respiratory system and their circulatory system. So if you've got them tipped up, not in their normal position, and we've already got a sedated animal, if they're not emptied out appropriately, that's just putting more pressure. They can have difficulty breathing. They, especially in our really larger breeds, it can put a huge impact on them. So that is more from it. But also a ram that's sedated, say it's a ram that's been off food for very long extended periods of time, or if an animal's very unwell, there's increased risk. So we tend to find the deaths with sedation is usually associated with an underlying health condition, okay, most of the time.
Yeah, I reckon let's talk rates now, Mick. Do you want to cover that?
Okay. So when we shear rams, I tend to recommend in our British breeds 1 mil per 100 kilos, and it's more based on their surface area. So a bigger ram, they'll need a higher dose, right, for that surface area. So I tend to do British breeds 1 mil per 100 kilos, and that's of ACE Promazine 10. Right? Merinos, I tend to do 0.7 mils per 100 kilos, right? Okay, because we don't want an over-sedated animal, again, because of those risks of complications, because that's also where I see issues arise when people have been giving them, like, way too much, okay? The other thing is giving that dose intramuscularly rather than subcutaneous, because if you give it subcutaneous, they just don't absorb it as well, and you get a better effect by giving it intramuscular, right? So you can either give it high up on the neck in the muscle there or in the rump. I don't go lower down on the leg, because if a ram jumps, moves around, you don't know whether you've given them that full dose. I like using a bottle mount Vax gun. It makes it nice and easy rather than drawing up needles and syringes and having issues that way. So definitely talk to your vet about that. And they would be the main things that I consider. Also, with acepromazine, it can potentiate the toxicity of organophosphate. So you're using anything like Eureka Gold or anything like that, you should at least wait 24 hours before using any of those products if your rams have been sedated.
Is there anything else you wanted to add for rams or lambs just before we move on to use eat from me?
Yeah, I think the best way we look at it is we look at 45 minutes before you start looking at shearing them. So it gives it good time for it. A lot of people, you bang, sedate the rams and start shearing, they might as well not even sedated them. So need to leave them a good 45 minutes. If you can do them in a race and then just slowly walk them into the shed and put them in the pens, it helps it activate. And by then it's working really well.
Yeah, do you have anything else?
100% agree, Darren.
Awesome. All right, we'll keep working down these questions then. So the next, probably, oh, sorry, I just did miss a question there. It's the difference between, any difference between winter and summer for either rams or lambs?
So it was mainly between those different times is considering management of those stock post-shearing for heat exposure, weathery conditions, that would be the main thing. With rams, it's mainly just in the really hot conditions, making sure there's access to shade and water after shearing.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll go into ewes. So first we'll just start off with pregnant ewes. So how to best manage them around shearing time. We'll start with you, Dr. Mick.
So when we've got heavily pregnant ewes, they're more prone to metabolic diseases. So when they're off extended periods of feed, they can get preg tox or twin lamb disease. So that's where the ewe's nutrition, energy that she's getting from what she's eating, isn't meeting the demands of the fetus plus herself. So if they're off for extended periods, they get more prone, or if they're not getting sufficient feed to meet their energy requirements. The other one that we can also get is hypocalcemia, and that's where usually where there's been a stressor. So like if you've got a muster in ewes long distances and they're off feed for extended periods, it can make them more prone to it. And I've seen it pop up before where mid to late pregnant ewes were brought in quite a long distance and have gone down in the yards, or other situations where they've been brought in long distances and then because of weather or reasons they've had to be let out, and they were just let out in a holding paddock with not enough, and just the stress of coming in and out, we started to see ewes go down with hypocal. Okay, so that is an issue, things that we need to be considering when we're bringing in animals or any handling of late pregnant ewes. I really don't like ewes that are in their last 4 weeks of pregnancy, 4 to 6 weeks being brought in for shearing. Mid-pregnant is by far better. It's better on for the shearers, less weight, and better on the animals as well. So we do like them to be off feed for 18 to 30 hours. Younger ewes hog it's less, probably 12 to 24 hours off feed, because we've got to remember that the gut of the ewe makes up about 20% of their weight. So that's just putting a lot of extra work on our shearers when they're having to put them out. And if they're not emptied out enough, they're dragging a hell of a lot more weight every day. So they're my main recommendations with pregnant animals. Darren, do you want me to pass on to you from your perspective?
Sorry. Yeah, no, I'd agree on you with that. So most of ours, we're looking at getting them in sort of 9:30, 10 o'clock the day before we're going to shear them. But then we have to make sure we get that number of sheep out that day. Otherwise, they're starting to be in for too long.
I just had one text message there. So just confirming that it doesn't matter what stage of pregnancy, always curfew around that 18 to 30 hour mark.
Later pregnancy, I tend to not recommend at all in that period, but I like to stick to that kind of period. But young hoggets, maximum 24. The more further along they are in their pregnancy, you want to be cutting that down. Okay. Early pregnancy, they're in that first trimester, they're early pregnant. They're just very similar to your normal ewes.
Yeah, so I've got an individual case study, which I think you did cover, but just to make sure I'm covering everyone's questions. So I'm from the Central Wheat Belt. We're going into a series of hot days, and yeah, my ewes are heavily pregnant. So even with those higher 40, so I think I was talking about shearing in like January. So even that with those high degree temperature days still off for that amount of time, or still
Oh,
give them water.
I would recommend maximum 24 hours of water.
And if you could have some shade around your yards, just some shade for them to be in during the day while they're sitting out there.
All right, so this was another sort of case study question. My sheep have been off water and feed all day. They were supposed to shear them today. They didn't get to them. I think it's on that borderline. Is it acceptable to give them a drink quickly tonight if they are going to be done tomorrow?
I would say water, as long as they're going to have a good 12 hours off water, I would be letting them out for, especially in that hot weather, just to make sure they've got enough period just to have a drink and then take them back off, because otherwise they're going to get a bit of a feel again, and then they're urinating across the board, and it gets more of a risk for your shearers as well.
Do you have anything to add to that one, Darren, from a
Yeah,
shearer's
no, I'd
perspective?
agree with that one. Just don't give them feed if they just have a drink. But they're still, if you're still going to have them off for over 12 hours, I don't see that it's a real problem.
Awesome. So I'll go into the next question. It's just before lunchtime. My presses keep filling the pens chock-a-block for up to an hour, and it worries me that they're getting too hot. And what could potentially happen from this situation? I just want to know or get clarity around what your thoughts are as a veterinarian.
In terms of, okay, overfilling pens, if you're not going to be there, as long as all the animals are standing, they've got no one's going down or anything like that. Yeah, they need, and it also depends on how hot it is, as well. If we're really hot and that, they're not going to be able to breathe as well. So I'd be taking those things into consideration. And if you're not there, I wouldn't be wanting to leave them too full for that hour that you're off for lunch.
What's your thoughts, Darren? And then the next question is,
No, I'd agree.
yeah.
They don't need to pack them that full. If they want them packed that full before they start, they can jump in there 5 minutes before the shearers start again after lunch and
Yeah.
pack them in tighter. But they don't need to be in there packed that tight for the hour during lunch.
I've just had this one texted in. How hot is too hot to shear? When to call it for your sheep? Not for your shearers, but for your sheep. But I think the shearers come into this too.
I think it's a two-way street as well, and it can depend on a lot on the environment and the shed and those conditions. Is there shade available for them? Is, those kind of things. It's not, I don't think I can say this is a specific temperature, but we've in any of these cases, we've got to be considering the animals as well as the shearers. Right, so for that
And
one, that's, yeah.
some of them real hot days where you're putting the sheep back outside straight into the sun, it's pretty hot on them. They've just had the fleece taken off, which has been their insulation growing on them for 12 months, and you take their fleece off them and put them back out into some direct sunlight, especially if the shearers are shearing them pretty pink. it's not going to be too good for them. It's going to overheat them pretty quickly.
And in saying that, Tiff, sorry, could I also, yes. It's if you're doing any backline treatments and it's bloody hot, you know, I've seen a lot of burnt sheep from that. Let your chemicals in the lines and that, they get bloody hot. So it's also being conscious of that. Put your chemical away in the shade in between, you know, because it can, yeah, really affect them. You've probably seen it as well, Darren.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, it's not very nice.
I've just got a question being submitted in. Can freshly shorn sheep get sunburned?
Well, they've still got enough wool on them that they don't get somewhere. It's just like Darren was saying, they don't have that insulation for regulation of body temperature. It's like us, you know, kind of, you know, being in a cold environment and you've got all your jumpers on and then you take all your jumpers off and you're out in that cold, you feel it like nothing else. So same with hot weather, they've got that insulation, you're taking that all away and they can overheat quite readily.
Awesome. So
yeah,
the
it's
next
a bit like getting a haircut yourself.
Yeah.
If you go and get a haircut and go out in the cold, you're going to feel it, or and likewise in the sun. So, you know, it's the same for the sheep.
This next question, I think's probably more for you, Darren. It's how to navigate these conversations with your crew or your contractor or your shearing team to avoid walkouts on the morning.
We've gone through this one quite a bit through our association and more so with some of the Eastern States associations. I think it all comes down to the conversation between the grower and the contractor to work out a time. So a couple of years ago, we went down to Esperance and they were having a lot of trouble, and sort of between the, I think we were with the A-sheep group, and between the A-sheep group and the contractors in Basil Parker down there, we worked out that, you know, what you're going to shear tomorrow, we have in at 9:30 today, and it's ticked off with the wool classer or whoever's in charge of the shed. So there's no reason to have to knock off. The sheep have been in since 9:30 the day before. And I think it's more just about conversations. I know sometimes a grower will get caught out, but if they can do their best and do that, and we found that works really well. Don't have too many people walking out with full sheep.
And this probably leads into the next question. It's what do the shearers like and how do they want to navigate this? I know I have my mobs on the board where it is written how long they've been curfewed for, and the shearers like the visual aspect of this. Are there any other suggestions like this? I know they like to know how many are in the mob.
Yeah, well, that same thing. If you've got your mob numbers there and they can see those mobs in the yard, so especially, you know, when they drive out of a night time, if they can see the mob in the yard for the next day, or even if they see them at lunchtime the day before, they know they're there. There's no reason to walk out the next day and try and stay at that pool.
I'll go back to a sheep question. Cold snaps and summer shearing, what can be the best way to manage potentially losing sheep? So I'll start with you, Mick, on that one.
Yeah. So it's trying to, if you've got paddocks with a bit more shelter and cover that they can get into, because that's the only way that we can help protect them, is if we have those really cold snaps come through. But it's more, I tend to see more losses in our winter time where we get the rain and the wind coming through, where it just that chill factor is huge, and it's just trying to make sure you've got shelter and protection.
Awesome.
On those sort of days, I always think you're better off knocking off at afternoon smoke and making sure your sheep can get out and get a feed before dark, even if you trail feed them some oats and stuff, so they, you know, their body's working and generating some heat out of the food that they're putting in them. You're not going to gain too much if, you know, if it's pouring with rain and cold as working right through till time, and then expecting the sheep to go out and get a feed to be warm for the night. So I think, you know, it's more management sort of thing that you knock them off at afternoon smoke and say, sorry guys, it's too cold to put the sheep out too late.
Right, we'll go back to, I think this one's for you, Darren, and it's specific again, more of a case study, but to do with relationship with shearers. I've had quite a few situations recently where I've had shearers claim the sheep haven't been emptied, and they have been. I'm really struggling with how to have a better relationship with my shearing crew. What's Darren's advice on this, as I feel it's a common problem?
Yeah, I think the only, like I just said before, I think the only way to overcome that is to have it that, you have your sheep in at 9:30, 10 o'clock the day before, and actually let the wool classer or whoever, the boss, whoever's in charge, the ganger, know that, and that they can see those sheep. If they walk outside, they can see those sheep in the yards ready for them to shear the next day. And in a bare paddock, some of the places we go to in the winter time or hitting the spring, the sheep are standing in, I know marshmallow, there's not, they don't like it that much, but standing in grass, they're just, if you've got paddocks again or holding paddocks with that, they just need to be sprayed down early and put a mob of sheep in there and eat them out before shearing.
Awesome. Dr. Mick, one for you. Management of shearing cuts, advice around that. And with a cut, when do you call it and euthanize the sheep, or what's your advice?
Okay. A lot depends on the size and where that wound is. So shearing cuts, like on certain places, they can bleed quite a bit. Like the head always bleeds quite a bit. If it's around the pizzle and the scrotum, I'd always put them off to the side to make sure the cocky can have a look at those as well with your rams. Big cuts need to be stitched. Always make sure you've got some antiseptic spray. If you can use off-label tri-solvent, that's great for smaller wounds for that healing and protection. But also you think about fly repellent as well. Hamstrung, euthanasia, okay, if it's been hamstrung, and it's hard to say there's one blanket rule. It just depends on how big the cut is, where the cut is. Is it going to heal readily without complications for that animal, or is it affecting that animal's welfare, unable to go out there and graze and those kind of things, graze and eat and act normally? Okay.
What do you think, Doc, of the spray-on band-aid stuff they got now?
I use a spray-on band-aid stuff, right? You've got to be careful with the spray-on bandage, right? Because I use it a lot when I'm doing surgery and that, but I'm using a clean site. You've got to be careful with those spray-on bandages because we're locking any bacteria in there, right? So that's something. If it's a clean wound, it's good, but I get worried with those spray-on bandages that we're locking in and holding bacteria in there and not allowing drainage.
No, it's just I haven't seen a lot of it, and this last year someone brought some into the shed and said to us to try it, and I thought, well, this would be interesting. I thought I'd get your opinion on it and see how we went.
So that is just something that I use when I'm doing surgery in my sheep for ETs and that, just to create that. But I've got a scrubbed up, no, fully disinfected site. Well, hopefully that's not become infected in any process. So yeah, but that would be my main concern with those spray on, locking it in and not allowing that wound to breathe.
To breathe,
So just so can you get Mick to summarize what we should have on hand for shearing time, veterinarian wise?
Okay, so antiseptic spray is always good to have on hand for those mild cuts, just and flies to keep flies away. I'd also, if you mules and use tri-solvent, I think that's really good because it can stop the bleeding because of that adrenaline in it. It causes constrictions. So they would be my main things that I keep and yeah, that I would have on hand.
Awesome. What is the best feed to have for sheep in holding yards, especially for pregnant sheep? If we can use these yards to help manage not curfews for too long, but having them handy to start curfew when needed.
I think it's always good just to have hay accessible for them, just in those for afterwards. But again, if they're going out there before you get them out in the paddock, if they're recovering for a little bit before you move the mob out, just a simple hay.
And do you recommend giving them a recovery period, or how long should the recovery period be before taking them out?
If they're all fine and happy, they're ready to go once that mob's finished. So there's no issues there in moving them. It's mainly in sedated animals. I like to the rams, especially like say you're shearing rams, it's a hot day. I'd let them settle down in the yards in shade with access to water, and then in the cooler part of the day, take them back out to the paddock, right? Rather than running them hell for leather where they won't want to move, it's hot and those kind of things. And likewise in bad weather with rams. Yeah. The main thing is thinking about feed that they're going out to. Any animal that's been off feed, if they're going back on to feed, your real starchy feeds and grains, just be thinking they've got to acclimatise back to that feed, that we don't want them at risk of acidosis or anything like that. Okay.
Awesome. All right.
I wouldn't mind putting one in there, Tiff, that
Okay.
you see a lot where sheep will be shorn and then they're left in a yard waiting till the whole mob's finished before they let out. I think it'd be really good if people could have water in that yard so that when they're shorn, they backline them, they've got water they can go to and have a drink, because some of those sheep have been off food and water for well over 24 hours. And you see them stand there, and like the doc says, if they could have a bale of hay in there just to chew on and just settle them down, I think it's much better for the animal. And then, they're not so straggly trying to get them back out into the paddock.
Awesome. We've just had another question come in. For lambs, should we be feeding before we drench, backline, and do all of the potential management practices?
It depends how long they've been off feed. Like if they're within that period, I would be, it's absolutely fine to backline them, drench them, and that. And if it's getting towards the end of the period, like you're really pushing boundaries, I'd probably consider, and just like Darren said, have them out on a bit of feed in that holding yard, and then do them.
Awesome. All right, I think that's all of the questions that we've had. If anyone else wants to chuck anything else in the meeting chat, or you can, this is the moment where we will allow you to unmute to ask. But Mick, while people are finalizing their thoughts, summarize, your top four tips coming at preparation for shearing. And you're next,
Okay.
Darren, so keep thinking.
So the main thing is think about the class of the animal that's coming in for shearing and how long you should be having them curfewed, and thinking about management of mobs in terms of the distance they've got to come in for shearing to the shed and what their status is, like their pregnancy status. Be organised in advance for your ACE for shearing for your rams, because a lot of times I get calls, I'm shearing, I need it tomorrow. And us just, we can usually get it to people, but sometimes it can be quite difficult. So if you know shearing's coming up, or you've got to, get organised well in advance. And yeah, have considerations about management of those animals after shearing in terms of feed and water, where they're going, and making sure that taking all those things in consideration.
Darren, what are your top tips preparation for shearing?
Make sure your sheep come in without dags on them. Because if you're going to run your sheep in the dagging and fly blame, you're going to have the shearers back up straight away, and that's going to cause you problems. The other thing is to make sure you talk with your shearing contractor well prior to shearing to work out how long they want their sheep drained and stuff. So if you know before they're coming that they want them, like I say, we asked our farmers that they have them in 9:30 the day before so that we can see them, you'll minimise the trouble you're going to have with people walking out. And then, like we just said before, I think post-shearing, that there's some food and water outside. Shearers will walk out. If a farmer runs a mob of 1,000 or 1,500 in and they're going to take a couple of days to shear that mob, shearers walk out and see those sheep just standing in the yard there, and they have feelings towards the sheep that they're not getting a drink or a feed. So I think, and it's much healthier to see the sheep walk out like that. Those are probably the three things. But I think most of it all comes down to conversation with your shearing team, with your contractor and your classer and whoever's running the team. conversations sort of between them solves a lot of problems.
Thank you, guys. Thank you both so much. Was there any other questions from anybody else? Or even Bolte, do you want to jump on? You can have a bit of a farmer's perspective if you have anything to add.
Look, I think been a really good, great summary, both by Mick and Darren. I couldn't agree more that, you know, communication is key, and that's something that as an industry we need to continue to work on, you know, coming from both as a producer, farmer, as well as a shearer, making sure that, you know, we have that really good line of communication. So before shearing starts, we know what the expectation is around those curfew times and how, you know, we're going to try and manage those mobs as they're coming through to make sure we hit those targets. I definitely think, you know, we've got to have strong consideration for the welfare of the animals. So it's been really good, Mick, with those key considerations around curfew times, water, temperature, making sure the management of the shearing cuts, backlining, all of those. I think it's been a really good summary. So thanks very much for everyone jumping on board, and thanks very much for the input from Darren and Mick.
Wonderful. All right, if we haven't got any other questions there, I can, in saying that, any questions you have after this, I can pass you on. Like, I'll definitely put you in contact with either Darren or Dr. Mick. So, this is not the end. I know Dr. Mick, well, I don't even think I said works at Genstock. So she's always got a phone there on her. So, yeah, awesome. But thank you all so much for coming on tonight. And, yeah, we've got a number of webinars, as I said at the beginning, part of the AWI TLC Partner Program, and we really do want to know what growers want and where we can help or what information you're after. And I know Darren and Dr. Mick are both a wealth of knowledge, so we're very lucky to have them. And I don't know if we had any challenging questions for you, Mick. We did try. I have had one more question, so I'm going to totally backtrack. What is the best remedy for preg tox post shearing or crutching?
Preg tox is a difficult one, okay, because once they get in that ketogenic cycle, it's really hard to kick them back out. If they lamb, that's great. It gets rid of the fetus and that problem. But products that you can use are Ketol or Seton. That you can buy them from your rural supply store. They are great. They have propylene glycol. They have vitamin B12 in it. And they are great products to use. The other one that I also add to the mix for preg tox is usually a flow pack. You know, those calcium, glucose and that. That's only a short term. So just getting in that. And getting them back onto eating again and food and water, okay, is really important. But the main one that I see animals going down with is usually hypocal, okay, where they've got those long stresses, long movements, and a flow pack that you can, again, get from your rural supply store. There's lots of different brands, and they have calcium in them as well, and you just give that underneath the skin there.
Awesome. All right. Is Vitrate any good for preg tox?
Vitrate is only, propylene glycol is a better source of glucose because of the way the rumen works than Vitrate, okay? I tend to prefer to use Ketol or Seton. They're both products you can get from your rural supply store.
Awesome. All right. I think that might be all of the questions. I'll just quickly double check, but thank you so much, everybody, for joining. Yeah, I think that's everything. Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks all for jumping on.
Thanks for having us, Tiff.
See ya. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening in to such an interesting episode. We hope the discussion provided you with practical insights for you to listen to on the go. We would love to know what you want to hear and get your feedback on what else you want to see in your town. So encourage all growers listening to please complete the survey. We'll include the link in the bio.